This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
I think the theme is just focus on getting funny first and then worry about whatever sort of accolades.
Yeah, I feel like those are the biggest things, are just like being funny and just being a nice person, I guess, helps.
Being a nice person,
because
yeah,
like you might be rude to someone because you don't care or something, and then maybe 10 years later they're like a big deal and you're like, oh wow, I really wish I was on better terms with them or whatever. So
has that happened to you? Hot Breath. What's up, Hot Breath-iverse? This is your boy, comedian Joel Byers. And you know what time it is. Hot Breath. Real quick, shout out to Kevin Howell, fan of the Hot Breath-iverse. He sent me a message giving me all sorts of praise and saying how he can't help but breathe at the beginning of all these episodes. So shout out to Kevin and any of you listening who do the exact same. That is what it's all about. Coming together in the name of comedy mastery. Every week I'm going head first into professionals in this business and trying to share a bunch of insights that you can then hopefully apply to your own comedy career or just bring a new awareness into your own comedy fandom. However, whatever, whenever you're listening to this, I just genuinely appreciate your time and it'll be very well spent today. I guarantee it. This gentleman here has been one of my favorite comedians just on the come up. You know, he's been a comedian who's done it his way, as you will hear in this interview, pretty much done it just from being funny. There are infinite amount of ways to find success in this business. This gentleman today, been on Wild and Out for 8 seasons. He's on America's Got Talent. He's been on Comedy Central. He's been on Colbert. Done a lot. And it's really all come down to being on stage and being funny and the right people seeing them. So don't beat yourself up. People find different success at different levels and at different times and at different moments, and people have different, quote, meanings of success. But this gentleman here we're interviewing today is someone I would count as successful, and I would say this interview is a great success. Right? But anyway, let's get to it then. I've talked it up enough. If you haven't heard of him, good. If you have heard of him, good. We're all going to learn today. I have my favorite moment of this Hot Breath episode, but I will wait till the outro to share it with you. And love, love, love to hear what your favorite parts were. And I have some big news in the outro as well for the Hot Breath-iverse. So definitely, please do stick around for that and learn more about how you can become a bigger member of the Hot Breath-iverse. And that being said, it is time. As there is only one thing left to do, everybody breathe with me now. And that is inhale a hot breath. You didn't do it. You were going to hold back as if you didn't know. All right, let's try it again. All together now. There's only one thing left to do. And that is inhale a hot breath. With Jacob Williams.
Has the podcast started? Or is it?
Yeah, the podcast has started.
Oh, wow.
I may look down at this periodically just to make sure we're still rolling.
So this is the beginning of the podcast.
Is your anxiety kicking in?
A little bit. Yeah, it's like I always feel, I'm never sure what's going on when it's like, I don't know when it started. Because I feel like I have to, I'm not naturally like entertaining. So I have to like turn it on, and then people still can't tell that I'm trying to be entertaining because I'm very low energy.
What's the difference between you turned on and turned off?
Well, I'm not usually this high energy, but I just had like 8 Red Bulls before I got here. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so this is live, and then will people be able to see the live thing later, or is it only for people that are here right now?
It'll be on my page.
For like Forever,
I think. Facebook. For Facebook. I don't think Facebook goes away.
Oh, wow. But is there a way to like edit out the weird, awkward beginning or no?
Oh, for this? Is it awkward?
No.
It's not awkward, buddy.
I just don't know when it started. All right, that's fine. Let's do it. We're podcasting.
Yeah, we're totally podcasting. Here, I'll get you some water to...
Thanks. I have some waters as well, if you'd like some.
This is hot breath water. That's for you, my man.
Official podcast water.
That's official podcast water.
Your educated escape.
So that's a...
Awesome. Wow. You have your own water. That's pretty...
It's Fontis. They're a local Georgia spring water.
That's above and beyond for podcasting. when you have your own water, you've made it.
Yeah, they do custom labels and like coffee and all sorts of cool stuff.
That's awesome. I'm just going to make sure this is... Okay.
So we can address the anxiety. How do you normally deal with your anxiety? What have you found at work?
Anxiety. What did you say? How do I deal with my anxiety?
Yeah, because a lot of people suffer from anxiety. So like, what are ways you found work best?
I think, I don't know. I just try to notice it more now and try to figure out what it's coming from and then deal with the thing. Like if it's anxiety from something I'm not facing, like I'm afraid to deal with, then I have to like just maybe think about what that is and then try to address it. Cause I think a lot of anxiety comes from, either like you're not facing something or you're worrying too much about what people think. So those are like the big things for me in terms of anxiety, that I just try to not worry about what people think anymore, which is obviously not always the case. But do you have anxiety as well?
Not really, but I know people that do, and it's not, and I know it can be crippling for people.
Yeah, I think I've gone through phases where it was kind of crippling, but I think I'm in a pretty good place now where it's at a level that I can notice it and address it, and it doesn't really like take over my life or anything. But growing up, I certainly had like, I'd say maybe at times crippling anxiety or just, you know, being really shy and overthinking things. And I still have a little bit of that, but I think I've learned recently how to recognize it and deal with it. And I've definitely made some progress. And then it helps as a performer that you learn how to communicate with people. And you can also kind of channel that into, I think hopefully being vulnerable on stage and talking about those things that you struggle with. And so sometimes like painful experiences you can get hopefully material out of and stuff, which is nice.
How do you address it? You've referenced that a couple of times. If you're experiencing anxiety, will you then just reflect on it? Will you write it down? How do you actually address?
I definitely try to write stuff down. Like every morning I journal like 3 pages, excuse me. And that's like something from this book, The Artist's Way. And it just kind
of... Yeah, I've heard
of
that. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that book. But the two things that I mostly took away from it were like writing 3 pages every morning to just kind of clear your head. I think that's helped me a ton. And then also like going on like an artist date, which is like just doing something for fun for yourself once a week where you just to like, you know, kind of give yourself a break and enjoy life. And it kind of recharges you and gets you... It actually, ironically, kind of helps your work, but it's all about like not... You know, taking a break from work mode and just doing something for fun, which actually makes you usually more productive in the long run, but it's just to recharge and everything. Anyway, sorry, I don't know if this is supposed to be like funny podcast or
No, I told you because you did like my live show
serious stuff
last night.
Oh, yeah,
I told you this
fun.
Is like how I built this for comedians.
Yes.
So have you heard How I Built This?
No.
It's an NPR podcast where they interview people who've like started major companies like Mark Cuban and people like that. And pretty much, do you know who Mark Cuban is?
I've heard the name.
He owns the Mavericks. He's just
a
really rich
famous
guy.
People that I should know that I know that I don't know.
It's okay. You don't have to feel anxiety about not knowing who he is. It's just...
Yeah, I've heard of him. I know a little bit.
It's just all about dissecting the comedian, their process, how they got to where they are and the mistakes they made along the way.
Oh, okay. Well,
but anxiety is something... If we want to... Like in thinking of comedians in general, anxiety is something that a lot of comedians suffer from. So it's a good insight.
Sure.
Even some people may, because I think you went through a phase where you may almost would like puke before shows. Did you go that in depth.
Oh, yeah. Did I tell you that, or did you just guess that?
I just know you, Jacob.
Have you been reading my journal? Yeah, I used to feel like I was going to throw up before every show. I was like I said, very anxious in general. So I was like, I would get a lot of nerves just, you know, about talking to someone one-on-one, mm-hmm. or even starting any conversation, let alone, you know, going up for a group of people. The first time I did stand up for probably 6 months or a year, I would do it as often as I could. But every time I would be terrified, and I'd be like, feel like I was going to throw up and have like, you know, I don't want to get too gross, but I'd have like nervous diarrhea. And
oh, it come out everything. The other end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
It would come out. It was like, whichever way, I got to get out of here. Cause something, sounds
gotta
like
get out of here.
Something terrifying is happening out there, which was just me talking to people with a microphone, which is actually a pretty safe setting physically, but in my mind was very, very terrifying. And it still is to this day. No, now I've been doing it like coming up on 11 years in September. Mm. So now it's it gets a little less scary over time, but you can still channel that nervousness now. It's like not as extreme, but I can usually now channel that into excitement, even though if it doesn't sound like I'm excited.
You are excited.
I am secretly, I'm excited, but it doesn't always show in my vocal range or anything.
That's part of the charm, though. And you've probably in Thanks. Doing comedy that long, and that's, you know, I've been doing comedy a little over 8 years. So
cool.
I'm thinking more in like the like more self-awareness and trying to like develop what like is my personality on stage.
Yeah.
Like writing is very important, but it's also now thinking of, I have the writing, now how do I deliver it that's true to me? And
yeah.
Like writing through that.
I feel like you have a strong delivery, and I've seen you do things like a roast battle. It was like you crushed it. It was really funny.
Oh, thanks, man.
Really
yeah.
good joke writing and performing. But yeah, it's like everyone, I guess it's just you figure it out more and more as you go. But
yeah.
especially by 8 years, like you definitely know what you're doing, and you're very funny. So
appreciate it, man. It wasn't yeah. that roast battle was not funny enough to air, but that's totally cool. It was cool. I went up against the Dulce Sloan, who's now on The Daily Show.
Oh yeah, she was really funny as well.
But our segment didn't quite make it to Comedy Central. We got on the cutting room floor, I guess, which is totally cool. In hindsight, I'm grateful that wasn't like the TV debut. So it was just a good experience and a good opportunity
yeah,
to perform under pressure. You know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that was a fun show.
Well, when you're in these pressure-filled shows, do you have a pre-show ritual that can kind of help quell the nerves?
Yeah, I know they say that you're supposed to picture the audience naked. One time I lost my glasses, so I did that, but it just looked like everything was censored. But anyway, no, I guess pre-show uh-huh. rituals. I like to, I don't know. For me, it just helps to like go over my set in my head and practice what I'm going to say. Sometimes I don't do that enough, and that does help, or just listening to other sets and, you know, just looking at the crowd to kind of see,
mm-hmm.
You know, cause I'll probably still do the same jokes I was planning on, but then it's nice to know if it's like an older crowd or whatever the situation is. And then you can at least be aware of that. So how about you? Do you have like rituals?
I like to keep to myself. Like I have a notebook
yeah.
I always have where I'll pretty much just, I'll doodle or do like set lists, like the set list I want to do. And it's just something just to keep me in my own space and why I'm there. Cause I've always been like that. But the few times I got a little extroverted and hung out and like was silly with everyone,
yeah.
I like didn't have it for the stage.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
I
like
think
lose it.
Some of the times I've done best, a lot of times it's like, it's nice if I have the chance to be alone ahead of time so I can really think about
yeah.
it and plan it out. And then once you're out there, you can deliver what you planned on. But it is hard to sometimes switch from like social mode into performing mode because
mm-hmm.
you've been in front of people, but then it's almost like that's, you know, taken some of your performance power away because you're like already entertaining people, and then you can't go into like I'm basically just saying a less articulate version of what you just said, but I agree with what you
I agree. So yeah, and everybody has a different process. That's why I love stand-up, is because it is an individual sport.
Oh yeah, like some people, you know, can be like hanging out and then just go on stage and crush, and
yeah
I guess yeah I'm more of the It helps me if I'm like alone before to, you know, figure out what I'm going to say. And then.
And what's cool and watching you, like, because I've seen you live some, but I got to see you at Cat's Cafe here in Atlanta this past Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of the long, it's been going on over a decade now. But just to see that show can be, especially like the host was super hyped.
Oh, yeah. He was crushing.
But then you go up there. And you go right into you. You don't kind of like wait for like the waves to sell or anything. You literally just go right into your energy.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, that was a little jarring. But then they came to you. Like you kind of lulled them into your song, which was very fascinating to watch.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I'd like to maybe, that's probably something I could work on is like being more like, you know, adapting more to the room, because usually I do pretty much stick to what I'm going to do, but it does help to be aware. Sometimes you have to like move things around in the set or do a little bit of riffing up top to get them. So I don't know, for me, like my favorite part of stand-up is just like telling the jokes I plan on, but
mm-hmm.
there's definitely like weird situations sometimes where you have to follow something really intense and then you have to figure out how to deal with that. But yeah, that was a fun show. That was cool.
But there's a confidence to sticking to your notes, because if you try to replicate the comic before you, then that's not you and it doesn't come off very well. You were just you. I'm trying to compliment you on the confidence it takes to stick to what you were going to do regardless of what happened before you.
You could say it's either confidence or just not having a range outside of the thing I was planning to do. So that's my only option. But thank you. I'll take it. Are these people talking on Facebook Live or what is that?
I'm not sure what's going on all the way over there. It may just be people who showed up and then left. Are people saying anything?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Someone asked, did he say nervous gonorrhea? And the answer is no. That was, I might have mumbled that. That was diarrhea.
Nervous gonorrhea.
I forgot this is being recorded on like three platforms. So just to clarify, that was diarrhea, which is gross, but not in the same way as the other one. And then someone said, I don't know, they wrote something else. All right. We're mostly caught up.
What is the worst you've ever bombed? Like, have you ever been booed on stage?
Yeah, I'm sure I have. I did one show that was like, I got booed once. That there was this show on like a boat that was like going to the Statue of Liberty and back. And then it was like, there was a comedy show, but I don't think anyone knew that there was going to be one. So for like 4 hours, everyone was just like drinking and dancing and eating and having a good time. And then, so everyone's just like on a dance floor and then they cut the music off. So everyone's like already mad that there's no music and it's like 4 hours in. And then they're like, all right, it's time for a comedy show. So then you're just like performing for people that are just upset that you're talking and they're talking. And, there was like one guy, like I guess they were booing everyone on the show, but it was pretty intense when it was like the first time I'd been booed. So like, there was this one guy that was booing and like running towards me but then he would just like stop and like do another lap or something. Like, he's like, I might as well get some cardio and
in the middle of your show.
Yeah. It was weird. Cause like there weren't chairs. So like, it looked like kind of a rap battle situation or something. Like, you're not supposed to be standing at the, it helps if people are like sitting down. And anyway, it was like a whole weird show situation, but yeah, I don't know. I've had plenty of shows that didn't go how I wanted, but I think that's part of comedy is a lot of trial and error, and then you just see what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's just a weird situation for comedy. Like, I did a show in a library. this guy called me. He's like, you want to do this show in the library? And I'm like, how much does it pay? He's like, nothing. I'm like, all right, I'm in. So I showed up.
Yeah.
And there were like two people in the audience, and when I got there, which I'm kind of exaggerating because one of them had to leave to use the computer, before they introduced me. So I was literally like doing a show for one person in a library. And then like right when I started, like two librarians came in and they're like, hey, it's 4:30. We're closing. So you have to wrap up the show. So that was like the first time I got heckled by more people than there were in the audience. And I was like, can I at least check out a book on overcoming depression or something? But yeah, that was...
Are you doing a bit? Is that a bit?
I just did a bit. The last part of the bit is... Yeah, no, I was hoping you wouldn't call me out on it. And it would sound like an organic story, but...
I was just listening. I'm engaged. That is
a bit, but it's also a true story. Is our bits allowed on this?
Absolutely.
More like,
yeah, you're great, man. Anything's allowed.
Anyway. I felt like I got away with that until you...
Doing a comedy show in a place you're not supposed to be talking.
But I feel like you might have figured out as a bit because we did a show yesterday where I probably did that on stage.
I don't remember you doing that. I was just listening. It was just very clever. So I assume there was some structure involved.
That's actually not a bit. Everything I say just comes out like a joke. Not really. All right.
It was kind of like last night at my show. I was asking about Wildin' Out and being the, like, I was like, oh, and you're the white guy. And you're like, well, I am on there and I am here and I am everywhere. Like, you had this whole like retort.
Yeah, I'm always white. My ethnicity doesn't like change based on the location I'm at or whatever.
Is that a bit?
No, that was a real.
Just reaction. Cause I figured you've been asked that so many times.
No, it might turn into a bit now, but that was a genuine first time reaction.
Maybe we found something there. In the moment, because how you delivered it was it's the same as if you were performing, and that then you started to like jar, like when I like asked you about being nervous, and then you were like, yeah, this is just my big break or whatever, like you started making fun of the show, and I was like, there he is, there's Jacob, because there's a reason you're on Wildin' Out for 8 seasons, you know, like there's some, you're like a sniper with it, you know. It's very unassuming.
Thanks. No, I appreciate that. I feel very lucky to, be here after my 8th season, and it's super fun. But it is like, comedy is so weird because I feel like, I mean, I've been doing it a while, and it's still like even 8 seasons in, I never feel like totally, like it's not like ever a time where I can like coast because it's still like. You just don't know what's going to happen, which I kind of like the excitement of like, I can still say something and like, I have no idea how it's going to go. Like it might, luckily, you know, if something doesn't go that well, they usually edit it out and just keep in the stuff that works. Mm-hmm. So you just got to try stuff out and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So I like that. It's like, you're never totally comfortable and there's always like that element of like, I think this is funny, but maybe the crowd will love it or maybe they won't.
How prepared are like the bits on the show?
It depends. Like we've been rehearsing the games and stuff, but then usually once we tape, it's like totally different just based on what they choose for that day. So the rehearsals help us like get in that mode of like coming up with stuff on the fly. But on the actual show, it's basically improvised. And then, you know, sometimes you can look and see who's on the team and like try to think of something, but then they might say something to you first that like, throws it all off, so you just kind of have to be like ready for whatever.
Yeah, because you have an improv background from doing comedy in Chicago, right?
Yeah, so I did a bunch of improv classes there and everything, so that helped I think with Wildin' Out, because you have to like basically improvise stuff, which is fun because it's like a different muscle than stand up. So I like that I get to do both. I don't know. I guess stand ups and improvisers are usually like rivals and make fun of each other.
Apparently, yeah.
But I like doing both of them, and it's super fun.
Yeah, and Atlanta's like Chicago, and that there's a big improv scene and there's a big stand up scene.
Yeah, definitely. I like. I've done some improv and some stand up here so far, and I like that they have a lot of places for both. It seems like they're both really cool communities in town, so that's good.
Yeah, I like to think Atlanta's up next. That's what we're thinking. Like Chicago, yeah. I feel like is on right now with people like Lil Rel at the helm of comedy and things. But I feel like Atlanta's maybe the next in line.
I mean, I think all of those places are in the mix. There's like, super funny people out of here and Chicago, and just nowadays, like, all over. There's a lot of good comedy scenes right now, which is really good.
But you can always be the Beloit. You can always say you're That's Beloit's true. Finest.
I technically started in Beloit, Wisconsin in college. It was the first place I did comedy. So,
what was that experience like?
It was pretty good. Let me see what these
are you
people
nervous?
Are
oh, I thought you were leaving. I was like, oh no, we brought up Beloit. He's leaving.
Someone said they're naming their next album Nervous Gonorrhea. All right, we're all caught up. So Beloit, Wisconsin is a small town on the border of Illinois. And
hashtag,
I like that my biggest laugh on this I got so far was from reading that person's
hashtag
thing.
Nervous gonorrhea. That's gonna be merch. We'll have merch.
We're gonna, yeah, have, it all, we're gonna have it on the water bottles.
Yeah, it's gonna be on the next water bottle.
I don't know if anyone's gonna want to drink out of that, but wow, this is already,
is it tangling up?
That's all right. It's
so Beloit, what was your first show like there?
I had a friend that was like starting out doing comedy, and that was the first time I saw someone starting from scratch and not like a professional. So I was like, oh, he's doing it, I might as well give it a shot. So I like told all of my friends I was going to do comedy at this open mic, and then I got really scared and I probably would have backed out, except then they like showed up.
Right.
So I was peer pressured into sticking with it. And it was like a fight or flight situation where I felt like I was going to be, if it didn't go well, I would be like known as the guy that bombed and was humiliated.
At a school of like 1,300
people.
Yeah,
it's like a pretty, yeah, exactly.
It's a tiny liberal arts school.
Know, how do you know all this information?
Oh, you're on the internet, man.
Oh, okay. Oh, you do research. Uh-huh. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, it's written down. Do you want to see it?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I went to a small liberal arts school like that too.
Yeah.
So I understand that environment, but I didn't do comedy until second semester of senior year when I just had nothing to lose but loans. Nice. So I just went for it. When did you do it?
I started like right when I started as a freshman at the beginning of college.
So you became that guy. You became the comedian on campus?
Yeah, I guess so. I was like, because it was such a small school, I was like the only comedian. There was also an improv group that I tried out for and I did not. I succeeded in getting cast in it, but it's okay. But I got to do, but there's some funny people in that. And then, most of the college, I was just like doing open mics and, trying to figure it out. This is probably, I think you've done the most research anyone's done that's interviewed me. I've never heard someone that knew, first of all, of Beloit, Wisconsin, let alone how many students were there.
Uh-huh.
So
the mascot
impressive.
Was the Turtles. Well, the Buccaneers was the official, but
yeah,
then the Turtles was the...
That's true. Yeah, I was on the track team, so they had the Turtles on there, which, like, I know they say slow and steady wins the race, but it doesn't. And
Do the bit.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. you know all my bits, too. I feel really... I can't do them if you know their bits.
But if they're good bits, you don't mind hearing them, you know? Like,
yeah,
a good joke.
But I feel like it's, in an interview, it's like you're not supposed to do bits unless it's organic to like sounding like it's part of the
right
conversation.
That's true. I don't want to play like
karaoke. It sounds like I'm trying too hard or something if I do material. But if you don't know it's material, then you're like, oh, that was funny for like a spontaneous conversation. But then if you know it's material, then you're like, oh, that's like... kind of weird that he's just reciting stuff.
Well, another fun fact I know about you that may make you nervous is that you weren't really allowed to watch TV growing up.
Wow.
You know
a lot about me.
What was the home environment like?
My parents are both kind of chill, I would
really?
Say, in terms of some ways. In terms of, maybe chill is the wrong word. But the reason I didn't watch a lot of TV was because my parents kind of believe in the Rudolf Steiner philosophy of the Waldorf schools, which is like this school where you kind of limit TV time and you kind of focus on developmental style learning where you like learn to read a little later and stuff. And the idea is that like you do stuff because you're passionate about it and you enjoy it. So you're not kind of like forced as much to like memorize stuff or whatever, but it's more about just like learning how to get into learning in a place where you're excited about it. So even like the math classes and stuff, they'd tell stories. There's a lot of like fairy tales as a, you know, in the lower grades and stuff. And so
interesting.
They kind of get you into it that way, and where you're like entertained or kind of passionate about it, hopefully, or at least that's like the goal of it, I think. So then it's like you find the stuff you gravitate to and that you want to do, not because like they're making you do it, because like you know, get a chance to do stuff as like experientially, kind of like building a shed or like some of that more practical stuff mixed in with the other kind of reading, writing, basic math and whatever.
No, like a liberal arts approach, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like a liberal arts approach for younger kids. Yeah, which sounds like really pretentious, probably, but it was a good experience.
Like woo woo.
But yeah, it was a good grade school experience, and then I don't know. Yeah, so that was my grade school. Let's see.
Oh, is there more?
Let's go to the comments.
Let's go to the comments.
It only shows two things at a time. All it says is that someone is watching. Bring them on camera. I don't know what that means.
I'm not sure either.
Anyway.
But hey, thanks for watching. So what did you gravitate towards when you were a kid?
I guess I definitely got really into like reading and writing and storytelling, and I would like write short stories for my friends, and then I had a lot of free time as a kid.
Only child.
Because I was an only child, and my parents weren't super social. But
really,
so there was like
is that where you get it from?
Yeah, so there I think both my parents have some, maybe some forms of anxiety, and I probably got a little bit of that from them. But I think I also learned a lot of constructive stuff from them in terms of I don't know, just like having a lot of free time did help me like maybe figure out that I wanted to do something with entertainment or whatever. And so I didn't know it was going to be comedy necessarily, but I would like always want to make short movies growing up and things like that. And so it's kind of fun now to get to do comedy and show business type stuff, because that was always like something I was interested in growing up. And
what did they do? What is their profession?
My dad's a social worker and my mom's a teacher. So
my mom's a teacher. Nice.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's pretty different than what I do in some ways, but I think they both found something that they were passionate about that, like, you know, they just liked doing every day. And I think I've found something too, even though it's a totally different field and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I feel definitely lucky to get to do comedy. And
I love it. It's the best.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
It's the best.
Definitely. It is the best.
You're doing great, man.
Oh, thanks.
You're doing great.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, here you're doing great, but then also just in your career, like it's
how I
called you like the silent assassin in person and with your rapport, but also like your career, like you've done a lot, and it's all seeming like you're all just kind of like very unassuming. But then when people look at your resume, they're like, wait, what? And he's only been doing it like a little over 10 years. It's very impressive. Like the trajectory of your career, man.
Oh, well, that's very kind. Thank you. I'm just trying to figure it all out. And it's always, everything is still a mystery to me. I feel like I've just gotten lucky a few times and stumbled into stuff. And but yeah, it's like anything. You just keep doing it. And I think good stuff happens if you just keep at it. And there's always ups and downs. But overall, yeah, I feel lucky that I've gotten to do some fun stuff. And yeah, it's the best job that I could imagine having. So I feel definitely lucky to get to do comedy.
And I mean, I don't know if luck would be the right word, but you've had some really pretty, like, almost like predestined experiences that have really taken your career up levels. Even just the America's Got Talent, you all the way from you doing a talent show in college that then gets you to open up for Nick Cannon, which then leads to America's Got Talent, right? That means leads like what? Like, it's just every step of the way, it seems like there's always been something there that keeps you propelling.
Yeah, I definitely never know what to expect. And I'm sure at some point, you know, I always like assume everything might go wrong at any moment.
It's like, all a sham.
Feels like there's no stability in comedy. But yeah, I feel lucky that I've had like some good experiences, and yeah, I got to like open up for Nick when I won this contest in college, and that was a really good experience. And then I guess from there in America's Got Talent, he asked me to audition for Wild Now, and that was definitely an exciting moment for me, and scary, because it was like after America's Got Talent, I was pretty like depressed for a while and kind of
really
bummed out about just because like I didn't do as well as I wanted in my last round, and I was like feeling like kind of disappointed in myself. And then I was like, oh, maybe I'm like, you know, maybe I suck and I should like quit comedy. I was in a pretty dark place. And so then, yeah, I mean, one thing that externally, I mean, hopefully I got myself out of it a little bit, but it certainly helped to also like in a kind of a dark moment of my life to hear someone ask me to audition for something and then to get to do it and still be doing it later is like, it was very surreal, because it was like I had no idea like the show was coming back or that it, mm-hmm. I didn't have an agent or anything, and so
this is just all you.
Yeah, I mean, like, I haven't really had a manager for most of the time I've done comedy. I have one at the moment that I got recently, but a lot of this stuff has just happened from, I feel like if you just keep, you know, keep getting on stage and keep just doing what you think is funny, good stuff will happen. And there's always, you know, ups and downs and trial and error. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely feel lucky that, you know, I've gotten to do stuff from just being around, and just, I think a lot of it is like, you know, it's not like I'm naturally the funniest person ever, but if you just keep showing up and keep writing and getting on stage, yeah, I definitely think it pays off. At least I'm very happy with whatever results I've had from doing that. So, yeah, it's been fun.
It's so funny. Like, you make this big appearance on America's Got Talent. Did you make it all the way to the semifinals?
Yeah, I was in the semifinals. So I think I performed like 4 times overall. Show.
And you do great. You have millions of views, but yet you're like, oh, no, that wasn't.
Yeah, I guess I wish I'd, I think, yeah, like if I was on a show like that now, I think if it didn't work out, I would be a little more mature about it and be able to move on quicker. But at the time it was like, I had like nothing going on. And then that was like my first big exciting thing. And then also one of my first big like disappointments at the same time. Cause there were like really fun moments about it where I was getting like standing ovations and stuff. And then there was like, you know, parts where it didn't go how I wanted. And that at the time I took everything really personally. And now that stuff, I think I'm able to like not be quite as phased now. So back then it's like I could read like a mean YouTube comment and then get like depressed for days. And now it's like there's so many YouTube comments, like I don't really read them, or if I do, I don't take them personally, because it's like it just eventually, I think you just kind of get calluses, or like, like you have to still be sensitive, I think, to be aware of like what's, you know, you want to be listening to the audience, but you don't have to like take everything like where it's going to like affect you and ruin your day.
Totally.
or give you like an inflated ego either, you know? So it's like, I guess I just try to pay attention to like overall, like, you know, cause you do one show where it's like a tough crowd and then one show where it's a great crowd, and you can't really rely too much on either, cause you have to like in your brain be like, okay, that worked, but maybe they're laughing more than usual or less than usual. And then you just,
yep, look at it more in the law of averages.
Over time. You just figure out how to adjust to each thing.
And that was like 3 years in, right? Like the America's Got Talent. Like it was early on.
It was pretty early. I had been doing stand up for about 5 years, but I was like, 4 of those I was in college. So it was like the equivalent of maybe a lot less time than that, just because it was like sometimes I could only do an open mic every couple of weeks or something. So in reality, I was like probably much less progress. So it was like kind of surreal to be going from like, you know, struggling with day jobs and, you know, doing mostly probably open mics at the time and some stuff on the road. But it was like I was still certainly figuring things out. And with that show, it's not always like, you know, the funniest person, but I think for whatever reason they responded to me maybe as like a part of its casting and what story you have. So they could be like, oh, here's this nerdy real estate guy, because mm-hmm. I happen to have a part-time real estate job for like 3 months. So they could, it just gave them an angle to be like, you know, like make it seem like I had never done comedy before. And then that's like entertaining right. for TV. So it's not necessarily like this is the funniest comedian, but it's like a funny like surprise if I'm decent at comedy.
You're like Rudy.
That the audience thinks that I've never done it based on how the first one was edited.
Oh, they edited your set?
Well, it was just, I only mean that in terms of how they presented it with like I come in and like it looks like I'm like this real estate guy that's like never done stand-up.
Right.
In the interview. And then I don't know, I probably shouldn't say too much because of the whole non-disclosure stuff they have. But yeah, it's, they still. Obviously they do like to play up the drama and stuff, which is makes it, it's just why, you know, part of why that show succeeds is because they know how to tell stories. And so it doesn't always necessarily work in your favor, but it's like a good opportunity, I guess, if, for exposure, which is nice.
Well, you hear that in reality shows where somebody may say, I hate spinach. And then later on they say John, and then they'll cut together. And this, I hate John. Yeah. They'll like, you know, so it's.
Yeah. Like there's this one time on there where I think they're. Had me say like I drink water when I'm nervous, and then they cut to this shot that I didn't know about of me just like chugging water. So it looks like I'm like, anyway, let's see what they're saying.
Are there more comments?
It says wow, this one is so long I actually have to click the see more.
What does it say?
I think he's like roasting me, maybe.
He's roasting you.
It says, or me. Didn't he lose out in the semifinals to that kid that can dig tunnels in sand using only his teeth and eyelids? I don't remember who else was in the semifinals. That is very possible. I think I did have to follow like a parakeet that was like flying through the audience.
Whoa,
and doing tricks,
dude.
Which is the other weird thing about that show, because normally you're like, oh, I might have to follow like a high energy guy or something. But then there it's like, oh, no, it's going to be like a kid doing backflips and like
right.
a dog that's like jumping through hoops on top of the audience or something. So then some of that stuff you just can't compete with as a human, let alone as like a you know, struggling comedian always, but it was a good learning experience. And, in some ways it was like, I couldn't have wished for a better, just even that it led to Wild Now, which has been so much fun.
Oh my gosh.
Is like,
yeah.
I guess I'm actually pretty lucky in terms of there's no guarantees of it leading to anything. So the fact that I've gotten to do a fun other show from that is, which probably wouldn't have happened otherwise, you know, anyway,
yeah, it's just
I
one
feel very lucky for sure.
Yeah,
that.
Dude, and I've got to tip my cap to your Colbert performance as well.
Oh, thanks.
That was
another thing where I was just performing at a comedy club. I didn't know anyone from there was in the audience, but someone I didn't have an agent or anything at the time, and someone just came up to me afterwards and gave me a card and was, you know, the one of the bookers for that. That's she's very. Proactive about finding people in the scene.
She's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
she's awesome.
Yeah. She's the best. So, I got really lucky that she, you know, without having reps or anything, she saw me and saw something that she was able to give me that kind of opportunity. So I think it's great that, yeah, people do that. And it's not always like, it's not just about connections, but if you just keep putting yourself out there, it can definitely lead to, good opportunities for sure.
That's a good lesson in just focusing on being funny. And you've kind of referenced that in just things have just happened because you're just performing and someone saw you and you're just doing what you were supposed to do, not worrying about what other people were doing. And that's when you've gotten your opportunities, it seems.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where you never know what's going to happen. Like everything that's happened, good or bad, like I couldn't have really planned it out or predicted it. And, but yeah, the thing is like, yeah, when things haven't gone as well, it's usually because like I maybe took something for granted or I thought maybe no one important was in the audience or whatever it was. And I think I've learned that it's like, I mean, as a comedian, it's like the audience is your boss and really as long as you're making them happy, that's all you have to do. So it's not like you have any one boss, but you should be trying to make the audience laugh. And if you do that, then you're doing your job and it's going to pay off and like you're just going to get seen, you know, it's just going to happen like... So it's like pretty, I think it's pretty simple. As much as it seems like, oh, how do I like, some people are like, how do I get an agent or whatever? Mm-hmm. Like all of that just happens naturally. Like if you're, you know, funny enough to that crowd enough or enough crowds or whatever, like it just pays off. And If it doesn't work one night, maybe it'll work the next night. It's like, you just, you know.
Yeah, the discipline of being a comedian is performing the same in front of two people that you would 200. Like, delivering it, like, the show matters, even if it is seven people on a Tuesday.
Yeah, for sure.
When your manager, did he approached you, I'm guessing?
Yeah, that was pretty recent. I started working with him, and I guess I had met him through my roommate who works with him and is also a comedian.
Mm.
And so I guess it helps that I got to know him a little bit. But yeah, that was another thing where, I feel like you want a manager that like wants to work with you and stuff. So it's like, I think it's definitely good to wait until someone, you know, that's always the best case scenario. I think I've had like two managers total, including the one I just started working with. And I've also been on my own a lot of the time before and after that, but yeah, so like in between. And I do feel like it's one of those things where you still have to like do a lot of things on your own, but if you have the right manager, that can help a lot, and they can just help give you opportunities, and then you still have to kind of make the most of those.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always works best when it's like someone that wants to work with you. So it's not like, you know, if you're just like submitting and stuff, it, you know, it might be something where if you force it too much, it might not actually be the right situation. I don't know. Anyway,
is that what happened with the first one? It was more forced?
No, I don't think so. The first manager I had also actually came to me and saw me at like a Wild N Out premiere party and came and wanted to work with me, and I'd never worked with one before. And so I started working with them, and I think it was overall it was like a really good experience. And I decided to leave them later, but I definitely am still very like friendly with them. And, you know, at the time I just felt like I wanted to like do things on my own.
Mm.
And, yeah, it's like anything where, you know, it's like friendships or relationships where sometimes it's just like the place in your life that you're at or whatever, you just kind of figure out who's the right fit at the time, or if you want to like do it on your own, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm really boring right now, but
dude,
is there any?
No, it's very interesting because
I guess this is on topic for the podcast. Right.
Yeah, it's totally on topic for the podcast. Cause that's a world a lot of people are unfamiliar with, or it can be intimidating, or people can hold up having representation to a higher standard than maybe they should, because you've gotten most of your stuff just from being around and being funny, as opposed to having someone get it for you, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, like I said, like America's Got Talent, Wild N Out, Colbert, were all basically roast battle, I guess. It was all like kind of through just being around, or not really through management, and those have been really exciting things. My first managers did help me get on Adam Devine's House Party, and that was a really good experience.
Oh, Comedy Central, yeah.
So it's definitely like managers can be really helpful in some ways like that. But yeah, the vast majority of things in like gigs and stuff I've done, a lot of it is like just showing up, and sometimes they're like, oh, this person canceled and we need comedians. Mm-hmm. Or like if you're just there enough, they're like, oh, we should book this guy. And so, yeah, I feel like a lot of it just comes out of just hanging out at comedy clubs, and you make friendships and stuff, and then comedians really help each other a lot, you know. It just naturally happens when they have opportunities they can share with each other. So it's like, as much as it's competitive, it's also like, I feel like a very collaborative community where,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're like performing somewhere, you want to work with people you like. So you're like, oh, this guy I know is really funny, and then you can get them to perform there with you or whatever it is. And then hopefully that continues as, you know, I haven't gone on to like do my own show or anything, but it seems like, you know, when people are at that level, it's like, they definitely remember those people that they met just hanging out at clubs and shows. And then those relationships can definitely pay off in terms of building stuff together and learning like what kind of people you like to work with and everything.
Yeah, I've done over 135 of these. And the most common thing I've heard is like the people you meet are going to have your network is what's going to get you most of your opportunities. Like just the people know and grew up with and started with. Like somebody will get a TV show and then they need a writer or they need this seems to be kind of focusing. I think the theme is just focus on getting funny first and then worry about whatever sort of accolades.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And definitely, yeah, I feel like those are the biggest things that are just like being funny and just being a nice person, I guess. Helps.
Being a nice person, yeah.
Because like you might be rude to someone because you don't care or something, and then maybe 10 years later they're like a big deal and you're like, oh, wow, I really wish I was on better terms with them or whatever. So
has that happened to you?
No, not really.
Not really.
No, maybe. I don't know. I do. I was just like saying hypothetically. No, I do feel like I've learned a lot through like trial and error. Like, I do feel like it's important just to like there's no reason to like talk shit or whatever outside of maybe like your close friend or like lovers or whatever, or maybe not. That's a weird phrase, but yeah, in general, it's like, I don't know, like you don't want to be that person that's like just focusing on the negative or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And because anyway, so
yeah, I try to focus instead of like, why isn't this working? I try to focus on, oh, why is this working? Like focusing on following your successes.
Yeah.
It's a good way to get positive momentum.
And I think it, yeah. And also even, yeah, just being happy for people. I feel like it just makes you, it gives you so much more energy. Like it, you can kind of use every good thing that happens to other comedians as like inspiration in a way.
Yes.
To be like, oh, that's awesome that he's doing that. And then, you know, I'm doing this other thing, but it's like, it's inspirational. As opposed to like, I don't know, I guess in the artist way, they say like jealousy is a map. So it's like, you can be like, oh, that's cool that he's doing that and transfer that into like, what do I want to do? Like, what are my goals and stuff? And as opposed to like, oh, that, you know, fuck that guy for that he got this thing that I don't think he deserves or whatever. But yeah, I feel like that's, you know, it just helps. This is kind of corny, but one like phrase I think about a lot is just like that I read on like it was like on a like a motivational poster in a green room wall of like a college show I was doing one time, and it was something like you can't have a good day with a bad attitude, and you can't have a bad day with a good attitude. And it sounds like really kind of corny, but I, as like a really like logic driven person, I kind of like started thinking about it, and it's usually like come true for me if I've been able to like, you know, not that like everything good throughout the day, everything's going to be good or anything, but I feel like if you have the right mindset, whatever happens, like you're ready to like make the most of it or bounce back or like work around it or, mm-hmm. or take advantage of good opportunities or see opportunities that you wouldn't have seen. If you just are in a good place at the time. Anyway, so that's something I think about sometimes.
Yeah, it seems like that could play into your psychology degree, maybe what you've learned from actually...
Wow, you know so much about it. It's really funny.
Am I creeping you out?
No, I'm a little creeped out. No, I'm just kidding.
I thought you'd feel honored that...
No, it's just funny that you say it like as if everyone knows that I have a psychology degree, but like you're the only person that knows that unless I've already told them.
Now they know.
Now...
The Hot Breathiverse knows.
Yeah.
So I just figured, especially with you having anxiety, but then also... Stand-up is a very, it could be a psychologically driven profession as well.
Yeah, for sure. I guess psychology does help in terms of thinking about how human behavior works. You want to recapture that on stage and talk about real things and understand whether the audience is thinking and feeling or whatever. And so psychology, that was what I got my degree in. And I guess it was fun to learn about. It was something I was interested in. And... then I started doing stand-up where you don't really need a degree.
Right, yeah.
but I guess it was good. It was interesting stuff.
Because that's where, like you said, pre-show, you'll look at the makeup of the audience to see who's in it. Are there any other things where you kind of analyze the room in that way? To try to...
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I do try to like listen to the crowd and tell what they're going through. And you do want to like be in the moment. And so even though I do a lot of pre-prepared jokes, I wanted to... my goal is always to be like myself and be organic on stage. So yeah, I don't know. I guess psychology might factor in with that. How about you? What did you study?
I try to keep into account like what time is it? What day is it?
Yeah.
What is the makeup of the audience?
Sure.
What are they laughing at?
Are they wearing makeup?
In general, yeah. Because if it's a Tuesday in front of seven people in a bar,
and do they have makeup on?
Exactly.
What did you study? What did you major in? It wasn't that thing I said wasn't that funny, but I repeated it anyway.
Can you say it one more time?
Maybe if I say it a second or third time.
Say it the third, power threes.
Okay. So it's like when you look at an audience, you want to ask yourself, what's the makeup of the crowd and what's the makeup the crowd's wearing in addition to the makeup of the group, the makeup on their faces also.
Psychology, peeps.
Psychology. Did you major in a certain thing? Or
I did organizational management.
Organizational management. So that's like when you're in an organization.
It's business.
It's like you're like learning how to be a manager in a corporation kind of thing.
Yeah, and you also get into like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Whoa. And like the psychology of a corporation.
That is very psychology.
But it's like those.
So what's the, I probably learned this, but I don't remember. What are the hierarchy of needs? It's like food.
Oh, I really don't know.
Oh, okay.
That literally, like I had forgotten about that until I mentioned the organizational management. And I was like, well, what did I learn? And I just remember that being a slide in a PowerPoint at some 8 a.m. class. I have no idea what it is. I don't know. I don't remember.
Guys, if you're commenting on this, please Google Maslow's hierarchy of needs and let us know.
Yeah, let us know.
We need answers.
We do need answers. But that was, so it's like, I'm not really using it. I am in, I guess, show business. So you do use business in that way, but it's not like,
I mean, you got the water bottle, so that's pretty organized and managed, I'd say.
Well, we'll get you out of here. I know you've been...
I'm not going to get out of here. This is, I'm staying in this place.
Oh, yeah. This is your suite, actually. So I'm going to have to get out of here. But one thing I did want to dive into a little bit was your cold...
Let's dive into this Shark Tank.
You want to do a read-along?
It just made me think of diving because there's an underwater.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can
Atlanta
read.
Book.
I mean, yeah, we can read the whole thing if you want. We'll do that.
Go ahead.
That'll be a bonus feature then. You have to have a special password to log in and see the full video.
Yeah, that'll be behind a paywall.
Reading,
that'll be on the Patreon.
Atlanta Traveler's book.
So, Colbert. And it was cool to know you got it from just being funny in a club and then the booker seeing you. But in preparation for Colbert, what was it? How meticulous was it? Like, how many times did you rep the set? Like, really take us through, okay, I'm going to be on Colbert. Now what?
Okay. Yeah, it was pretty surreal. It was definitely different than what I would have expected. And for me, I'd gotten to do some other TV already, so it was like nice to have that experience, I think, first. But it was like a show that I always grew up like watching The Late Show and stuff when it was Letterman and everything. And I just thought that was a really cool space and a fun show. And so it was definitely like a dream come true to get to do it. But basically the process leading up to it was, I don't know, it was kind of a long process because it was like there was a lot of time where, like, you know, I think they have to get it approved by different people. But one day I think I just got an email that they were like, hey, we like this video, we want you to do it. And I think they made a couple of adjustments, so I did like a new video with the adjustments taken into consideration and just shot that with a new crowd. But basically I had a video, I guess they liked it. I don't know, it's pretty simple. They saw me at a club and enjoyed it, and then or like send me a video. I sent them a video.
5 minute video?
Yeah, it was maybe 6 or 7. Yeah, something like that. Maybe it was like 6, and then it got cut down closer to 5. Because they took out a couple of things maybe. But it wasn't like a huge notes process, although other shows I've heard do have more. Because I think they are pretty on board with stuff. I guess it just depends on the specific set they see, because sometimes it's like ready for TV, and then other times there's like things that you might have to take it out if it's like a brand name or whatever.
Right, right.
It might be really funny, but it doesn't work for their show or in the voice, you know. But yeah, it was pretty, for me, yeah, it was pretty straightforward. So then they were like, we want you to do it. And so then I just, once I knew what they wanted, I practiced it a bunch. And then
how many times do you think you probably ran that set?
I don't know. It was a little weird too, because I had to like almost reteach myself how to do it. Some of the jokes I'd stopped doing, because I guess by the time I heard back from them, it was like kind of a video already from a while ago. And then I was like kind of working on other newer material and stuff. But then when I got the call, it was like that they wanted that. It was like, I definitely ran it a bunch just to like be like, oh, okay, I guess that does work. Like it was kind of weird, because like, yeah, sometimes it's hard to get stuff approved. In this case, it was like approved, but then it was like, I had to remind myself that, oh, this joke, I guess, is funny, because it was like some of the stuff was stuff that I'd been like, I'd stopped doing, because I was like, oh, I don't know if it fits here. But then, yeah, once they gave me the notes, I was like, okay, I guess, yeah, that makes sense. And so, I don't know.
Anyway. The notes are like, we like this joke, but take out this tag to it?
I don't remember, actually, but basically, I think there were just maybe a couple of things that they thought like wouldn't work for whatever reason, or were too, like, either like too dark or too, you know, not the right fit for the show. And then maybe they rearranged a couple of things, because I'd actually sent them like a clip out of like a longer set. Yeah, so we just rearranged it so it would like have more of like a little bit more of an arc, even though it wasn't originally. I actually wasn't performing it that way, because I was doing a longer set. But then when they asked for a video, I'm like, oh, I have this one. And I actually thought it would be a lot longer process in some ways, just because I figured we'd go, you know, through a few, but I guess it was basically just the two videos, but over a long span of time. And so that's when, yeah, we kind of figured out what we agreed on for the set. And then, yeah, then it was a fun experience getting to be in that space and shooting there, and fun crowd, fun setup and everything. So
Do you have to type in? I've heard some shows, they make you type in your set word for word.
Yeah, I did send them like a transcript. So I guess that's helps them in terms of like just getting it past the censors and making sure it's not offensive. And then I had like a set list on the teleprompter. And so that even though I'd run it a lot, once you get up there, it is like a different situation, I feel like, because there's a lot going on with the cameras and lights and stuff. Even though they have that at other shows, it's like a little hectic, so it does help to like have that to go to, if, even though you already know it, just to be like
the transcription was up there,
or just I didn't have like the transcription, but I had like bullet points, kind of like you'd have a note with a set list,
right? Right.
So even though I knew it, I could like always remind myself, because it was like pretty specific, more so than like at a live show. You can kind of like say whatever you remember, and then if you forget something, like it doesn't really matter, or you can just make fun of it if you make a mistake.
But this is like, but you want to stick the
like,
landing.
Yeah, it's like if you don't want to like get them in trouble or everything, so you just want to like stick to what you agree on. But yeah, I don't know, it was like, yeah, it was a great experience. I've always wanted to do one of those like late night sets, so it was nice to get to do that. And
Would you also like rehearse at home, or like while you're in commute? Like
I did. My girlfriend at the time was riding there with me, and I ran it past her a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. And so she was probably really sick of it by then, because I'd just be saying it to her one-on-one and be like, okay, now like try to not laugh and I'll try to make you laugh, and like different things like that. Which but yeah, no, I'd run it past her and run it past other people, like friends over the phone and different types of crowds. And yeah, I don't know, it's like
Just burning it into your brain almost.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I feel like that can help. But it's also like, it's probably not totally necessary to always go too crazy with that, because it's like, you want to sound organic and real and everything. Because I think I have had things before where I like over rehearsed things, and then I was like it sounded too much like I was reciting when I did them. So yeah, I think you just have to find the right balance of being like in the moment and also, you know, remembering what you want to say.
Are you in the green room like pacing and going over it, like rehearsing it there too?
Yeah, I was definitely like thinking about it. I think it does help me to pace around and think about it, run it in my head or whatever. But I don't always necessarily do that for regular shows, but for that kind of thing, I do think it's important to really practice as much as you can to like figure out the beats that you want and everything.
I don't normally do that for like an open mic, but if I'm like trying to tape a new tape or something, even at that level of just I want to get a new tape, this isn't even television, it's like I am
that can
constantly
be stressful too, though,
running
it's
it.
Like you like you want it to be at the level of television, the live tape, so that, you know, if they see that, they'll be like, we should put this on TV. So
exactly.
It's like, even if it's not an actual TV taping, it can be as stressful, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, this is what determines if I get on TV, if I do well in this show that I'm taping. So.
Which they saw a set you had taped that they were like, oh, that would be good for TV. And so it translated.
Oh, yeah. So it worked out. Great. And it was funny because I was trying to tape like a longer set for a different thing, and which, you know, and then so it's just kind of funny how that happens. Like sometimes you tape something for one thing and then it might lead to something totally different, which you know, you just never know what's gonna happen.
And your joke writing is so quick. It's like boom boom and then you move on, and boom boom and you move on. It's like the editing process must be something you really focus on with word economy.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone, you have to play to your strengths, and some people are like have way more range as a performer and do like awesome act outs, which I don't, you know, I'm not like this super high energy guy that's like bouncing around making fun of people or whatever. But so that's why I try to do whatever I can, you know, which is not those things. So if I'm like, okay, if I can't do that, then I guess I'll just. You just have to play to your strengths. And so for me, I guess that's maybe it is some of the editing and just like figuring out the wording, and then also like figuring out my own way to deliver things. Even if it's not going to be this like super charismatic, high energy guy, I can be like, okay, well, how can I be myself, but also try to make it, you know, the best thing that I can do or whatever. So
it seems like you use pauses where you almost tiptoe to the punchline and then like push us over the edge with it. Does that make sense? Like in the timing of your pace? Like you had a
I was trying to pause there, but it wasn't really as funny. I was getting excited about this.
I'm sorry. I was nerding out about comedy.
Yeah, no, I think timing is important. Yeah, it's like anything, you know, just kind of.
It was good. That was funny. I'm sorry.
My timing on that joke was off, I guess, but because no one could tell it was a joke. But that's a bad sign for a joke, is if people can't tell that it actually was a joke. That's anyway. Yeah, no, I think pauses are important. That's definitely something you figure out over time, like how you to deliver and where to pause before the thing.
Because you draw from real life. And it seems like there's moments where you could go further, but you're just like, I don't work at the Apple store anymore. And then it's like, and then like people always ask me questions and you just move on. You could go into like somebody asking you a question.
Yeah. Or is that I actually do have some other things about the Apple store now.
Oh, okay.
But they weren't part of that specific set that I taped that ended up being the set for the thing. So yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's every show is a little different. So it's like kind of funny that. And then it's like, I guess I put that out, so it'd be weird to like, I guess I could do the other parts of that joke on a different thing. But
when you have more time.
But yeah. Like if it, on an album or something, I don't know. But yeah, it's like you just figure out what works. And.
But is that something that happened in your life where you're going to Apple stores and people and you're like, this is ridiculous. This
it's
is
happened
a joke.
A couple of times where people asked me for help and I was like, I had to be like, I don't work here. And
so that's where most of your material is like something happens and you're like, oh, that could be funny. And then you try it on stage.
Yeah, I just try to, like, anytime I think of something that I think is funny, or if something funny happens that I think could be funny to talk about, I just try to, like, write a note to myself so I remember, and then maybe try to flush it out later. And then I think free writing helps a lot.
Ooh, yeah, free writing's so great.
Yeah, a lot of times it doesn't feel like it's going anywhere when you free write, but then if you do that, I think it puts you in the right mode as, like, a writer, and then the rest of the day you're thinking as a writer, and you, as things happen, you immediately have in your mind, like, a funnier take than you probably would have if you hadn't done the free writing. So stuff like that, I think helps. I don't do it often enough, I feel like, but when I do, I think it does help the writing process. And
free write about something that happens in the morning and then let it ferment throughout the day.
Yeah, I think free writing about anything that happens to you helps. And then even if you don't think you're getting stuff out of it at the time, I think it gets you in a good mindset the rest of the day to think of things as they come to you and come up with stuff based on what's happening.
And I saw you also record your sets. You record all of your sets?
Yeah, I try to record them all, and then I try to listen to them. I don't always listen to all of them, but yeah, I feel like it does help the more often I can to, like, listen, especially to the newer stuff. Then you can kind of figure out what worked, because it's all kind of a blur sometimes. Once you're up there, you're just moving on to the next joke and you can't really think about it too much. But later on, you can go back and see, like, oh, that line worked, or that didn't work, or that kind of worked, but maybe if I reworded it, it would work better. So yeah, it's just, you know, seeing how it went and what needs work.
Stuff. So I don't mean to bore you with your own creative process. No. We'll land this plane. I appreciate your
plane.
He did an act out. That was a great act out. That's a YouTube that's exclusive. The, people
Wild
on YouTube
improv
will see
training.
That.
It's finally.
There's a plane? Where? Did you hear that? It sounded like a plane was landing above us.
It did. There was a bump up. There was some kind of noise upstairs. Something crazy is happening.
Turn up. Well, we'll let you turn down or whatever you got to do, man. But before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
I just want you guys to know that if you watched all of this, you have too much free time. No, I'm just kidding. thank you for watching. Please support Hot Breath, buy their water, listen to the watch the podcast or listen to it. And also, yeah, like you said, please check me out on season 11 of Wild and Out, coming out every Thursday starting July 12th. And we're also taping season 12 in Atlanta starting this weekend. I don't know when this airs, but yeah, so check so check that out. And then in the fall, you can see me in DC and a bunch of college shows and some other shows. So check jacobwilliamscomedy.com, and you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at @mrjacobwilliams, and on Facebook at Comedian Jacob Williams.
Comedian Jacob Williams, thanks for being on Hot Breath.
Thank you, comedian Joel Byers.
Yeah, thank you, buddy.
All right,
let's do. Boom.
Wait, did you just take a photo?
No, that's gonna be the thumbnail.
Oh, the thumbnail.
For the
Was
us pointing at the camera. Oh, unless cool. You want a different one.
No, that was good. Is there a way to get a photo now that I could post now, or is it
of this?
Of this, of us talking to the or no.
Oh, a photo.
Like a photo with that, like somehow, or no. Or a screenshot of
something. The video?
Maybe not. Okay, don't worry about it.
Of the video.
No worries.
Yeah.
Are we still recording?
We are still recording.
Is this still part of the podcast?
This is still part of the podcast.
This
we're coming full
circle.
This is the
weirdest ending of a podcast. Like, just talking about the logistics of...
We started the podcast with you being like, is the podcast ending? Is the podcast started?
More clear beginning and end of the podcast.
But then it's also the organic side that you had referenced, to where you just make it happen, bro.
Yeah, but then it's like, at a certain point, I'll be like walking down the street this week. I'm like, am I still on the podcast? I got to be careful what I say. Like, I thought this was everyday life now, but I think there's a microphone over there.
Yeah, there is. We're being recorded everywhere, so why isn't
the Truman Show?
Might as well get likes on it.
Check it out.
Yeah, we'll figure out how to get you on here, buddy.
I'm mostly here to promote Jim Carrey's movie from 20 years ago, The Truman Show.
That couldn't be more relevant now.
Absolutely. Social media.
Do you ever feel like you are The Truman Show? Do you ever get that paranoid?
In terms of being self-conscious and worrying that people are watching me, yeah, absolutely. I don't think I'm actually being filmed at all times for a television show, but I do have some of the paranoia and self-consciousness that goes along with that at times.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Is that
it? Yeah. That's a good ending. All right, Jacob Williams.
Thank you, guys. Woo. Tune in next time.
Hot breath. Oh, that was so much fun. It's amazing doing over 138 of these interviews. Comedians and their personalities, you just never know what you're going to get. Some are super extroverted, some are super introverted. Whatever it is, as long as they're funny, that's what matters. And I hope you learned a lot from Jacob today, as I did. And as I said in the intro, my favorite moment, if I were to say, would be diving into the Colbert process, how he got booked, what was the development process, the behind the scenes. That's what I really enjoyed. And it actually inspired me, and I would love, 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 and need and appreciate your feedback and insight on this, Hot Brethren and Sistren. Please feel free to reach out to me. Joel Byers, of course, but at Hot Breath Pod on Instagram and Twitter and on Facebook, Hot Breath Pod. I post daily video clips of these interviews as well. We're on YouTube. You can leave in the comments. But however you would like to reach out or come to my show, I host a Wednesday show at Java Monkey Indicator. Come say what's up. But I would love your feedback. In doing this interview with Jacob, I felt inspired to even... I'm looking for more ways to expand the Hot Breathiverse. And I was thinking, I'm now doing a weekly live podcast at my comedy show. So that's actually being recorded and becoming a podcast now, where the comedians perform and then I interview them. It's a really cool new format. But also, I was thinking about maybe doing another extra piece of content where I'd interview comedians specifically about them preparing for a set on like a Conan or a Colbert or, you know, a Jimmy Fallon. There are so many comedians out there every day getting to perform on these shows, and I'm sure they all have a different approach and a different way they got there. So it would be really interesting to dive just into that, even if it's just like a 20 or 30 minute interview, no, even over the phone, you know, nothing as big a production as these long form interviews you're hearing, but just almost another piece of content to kind of get you through your week. Cause I know just having these every Monday, it's not enough. I know. So that's why I'm starting to do my Wednesday show as a live podcast. And I'm interested to see your take on what you think about that show concept of just interviewing people specifically about how they made it onto late night and their creative process and the writing and the editing and the organization and just how they felt about it or how they felt it could have gone better. Just, we see their 5 minutes on screen, but I would like to get the preparation that went into that 5 minutes. It's hours of work that go into that 5 minutes. So if you're interested, please holla at your boy at Hot Breath Pod on all social media, or at Joel Byers Comedy on all social media. Also, joelbyerscomedy.com. You can check out your boy there and get more insight. I'm actually teaching a podcast class. If you're listening to this the week of the episode being posted, July 14th, I am teaching my very own 3-hour podcast crash course. I've been doing this over 3 years. I condensed it into 3 hours for you to really just learn about more about podcasting and the work and process, or giving you all the tools you need to start your own. So if you're interested, you can go to my website. There's a link to the Eventbrite page on there. If you have any questions, just holla at your boy. But anyway, let's get out of here. Let's land this plane. That was fun. Thank you everyone for tuning in. I'm so excited about where this podcast is heading. It's becoming more than a podcast, and it's very exciting, and it's thanks to you and the amazing success of our episode last week with Laughing Skull booker and manager Andrew George. Really gave me a boost to double down on what we're doing here. We're gonna go headfirst into comedy nerddom and everything and all that involves the comedy process. So let's do this, Hot Breathiverse. So shout out to you. Shout out to my engineer, Amon Garner, for keeping these all sounding crystal clear. And of course, shout out to my wife, Erin Byers, for making the theme song of this podcast. Oh, way back on Hot Breathisode #1 with Rob Hayes. Now look at us. My wife and I actually have our own podcast called Buyer's Life. If you want to hear another side of me that's not all about comedy, but all about our dog and all the fun stuff of being a grown-up that's married with responsibilities. It definitely shows a new dimension of me beyond just comedy. But that's Buyer's Life on iTunes and all that jazz as well. Stitcher and Spotify. Audio Boom. But hey now, let's get on with it. I love you so much. Thank you for your feedback. Please do not hesitate to reach out. Like I said in the intro, Kevin Howell reached out, gave me a lot of great insight and also positive and some negative as far as what he likes or maybe thinks that could be better. I am all about learning. That's what this podcast is about. So if you have anything you'd like to share, please do not hesitate. I need your feedback. That is how we're going to grow. So that being said, or your iTunes reviews, that helps too. But if you haven't yet, you're just a hater. So let's get out of here. We'll be back next Monday. You know the drill. Until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.